Hare Krishna. So today we'll speak about a hero's prayers at the time of death. So the hero that we are referring to is a very unlikely hero. Unlikely if we look at him from the perspective of what both the modern culture would consider to be a hero, as well as the conventional Vedic culture would consider to be a hero. The person we are talking about is Dhritarasura. Dhritarasura was born in a demoniac form. The very name Dhritra means to cover. Avrata is a cognate, is a related word. Asura, so it is said that he practically covered all the space around him just by his gigantic size. So he was born through a fire, and he was born as a demon, and he went on to become the leader of the demons. And he was such a powerful demon that when there was this battle between the demigods and the demons, initially the demigods were successful. But when Dhritarasura was there, they just fled away in fear. And there's practically nothing that they could do. And eventually they prayed to the Supreme Lord. The Lord told them to arrange an extraordinary weapon, a vajra, a specific weapon that would be comprising of the bones of Dadichi, and that would kill Dhritarasura. And after that is arranged, now Dhritarasura comes in the battle and is about to fight. So we will be discussing some of the last few verses of the 11th chapter of the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this canto has many extraordinary pastimes. It has the pastime of Ajamil, then Chitraketu, and now the Chitraketu has become Dhritarasura. So we'll discuss from verses 11 to 11.21 to 11.27. Those of you who have Bhagavatam, you can open the Bhagavatam, that verse. We will recite the verse together and then we will discuss this. So the situation that is there is Indra and Dhritarasura are facing each other in battle. Though Indra has that formidable vajra made from the bones of Dadichi, he first tries out his own weapon. That is his own vajra. He tries out one of his own weapons. And Dhritarasura not only checks it, but throws it back again at Indra itself. And Indra's elephant Airavat gets knocked off. So Indra has become disheartened. And when Indra is disheartened, when Dhritarasura starts speaking first, actually Dhritarasura chastises Indra and he says, You are a Brahmaha, a Guruha, and Madbhratraha. You are the killer of the Guru. So Vishwarup had been engaged as a priest by Indra and other demigods, and Indra had killed him. So I'm not going to go into the full story. We are going to focus here on the devotional emotions and aspirations expressed by Dhritarasura. So he is initially angry, and in his anger he says that today I will kill you and your body will become the food for the jackals. And then he goes on to chastise Indra by saying that actually you are such a sinner that even the jackals will not want to eat your food. And then he says, so here he is in a mood of a chivalrous kshatriya. The demigods and demons both are in one sense kshatriyas, they are warriors. So he is goading his enemy to fight, and then in one particular verse suddenly his mood changes and he says, if however you kill me, then I will attain the abode of the Lord. So till the verse 17 he is in a very gallant mood, gallant from the material point of view, saying that I will destroy you. And I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava with your head and the head of all the devatas. On the other hand, if you are able to kill me, then he said that I will be happy to offer my body to the jackals and vultures. In this way, I will be freed from my karma and I will be able to get the dust of the feet of the devotees. Atho hare me kulishe navira, atho hare me kulishe navira, harta pramathyai vashiro yadiha, harta pramathyai vashiro yadiha, tatrandruno bhuta balim vidhaya, tatrandruno bhuta balim vidhaya, manasvinam padaraja prapatsye. So he is describing manasvinam padaraja prapatsye. That manasvi means those who have conquered their mind. That is, say you are like Narad Muni. Now Narad Muni and Parvat Muni have enlightened Chitraketu in his previous life. And Uttarasura is remembering that and he is saying that if I give up this sinful body of a demon which I have got because of my curse from a previous life, then I will be able to attain the shelter of great sages like Narad Muni. So we can visualize here Indra getting a start. Here is this demon is in battlefield and Indra is thinking that this demon is a villain, and suddenly he is talking, aspiring for something very noble. Must be surprised over there. He says, I shall achieve that. So he almost sort of expresses an eagerness. And then he says, oh Indra, why are you not ready to kill me? Suresha kasman nahinosi vajram purasthite vairinimai amogham ma samshayishtha nagadeva vajra syanishvala krupanenarthe vayachna. So he says, Suresha, oh Indra, kasman nahinosi vajram, why don't you kill me? Purahasthite vairini mayamogham. I am sthite as your vairini, as your enemy. I am situated in front of you. I am amogham. Actually, the weapon that you have is amogha. Mogha means that which is ruined, that which goes in vain. But he says, mogha yurindriyaram amogham. Ghayurindriyaram amogham parthas jivati. Krishna uses the word mogha in 3.16 in the Bhagavad Gita to explain that those who live for sense gratification live in vain. So, maya mogam, ma samshayishthana gadeva vajraha. So, before this, Indra has used a gada and the gada has failed miserably. So, he says, ma samshayishtha, don't doubt like that just as your gada was a failure, this will also be failure. Syan nishvala krupanena artheva yachna, krupanane artheva yachna. So, he is saying that actually, you may be fearful that I just caught your gada and threw it back to you, and you will be thinking that if you throw your vajra now, then if I throw it back, how will you counter? But don't think like that, because the vajra is not stated over here, but that is the implication, that don't think that this will be like asking charity from a miser. You know, the idea of the metaphor is that it's going to go in vain. A miser is never going to give any charity. So, therefore, syan nishvala, don't think like that, he's saying. So, it's surprising that the same Dhritarashtra, just a few verses before, who is speaking in such a ferocious way, chastising Indra and threatening him to tear him to pieces and to kill him and to destroy him, now, actually, for every devotee, especially for exalted devotees, the Lord arranges that at certain devotion, certain particular moments in their life, the world sees their devotion. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was an eternal associate of the Lord. But his devotion did not manifest from his childhood. Although he was born in India in the Renaissance time in Bengal. When Britishers had just taken over the rule of Bengal and India, but Bengal was just in the middle of a cultural clash between traditional Indian culture and the Western culture or the British culture that was coming into India at that time. He was born at that time, and he manifested his devotion quite late at a particular point in his life, especially after he read Chaitanya Charitamrita. His conversion to Gaudiya Vaishnavism was complete. But he was always an eternal associate of the Lord. But that was not manifest to the world. So similarly, till now, in this life as Vritrasur, the soul who was early Chitraketu has not manifested his devotion. But now he, when he knows that actually the Supreme Lord has made a vajra for vajra through Dadichi's bones and has arranged to give it to Indra, that means my death is inevitable. So then Vritrasura is actually now starting to express his devotional aspirations. So what was there in his heart in a dormant stage now becomes active by the arrangement of the Lord. And he is going to speak such exalted devotional sentiments now from here onwards. But he is telling, so what is he comparing? That you will not get, that you will not get charity from a miser means that you are, as far as your earlier weapons were concerned, trying to kill me with the earlier weapons is like trying to ask charity from a miser. They failed, but don't think this will fail like that. So why will it not fail? He is actually expressing more faith in the Supreme Lord than Indra. And he is giving Indra faith in the Supreme Lord. Nanvesha vajrastava shakra tejasa harer dadiche tapasa cha tejitaha tenaiva shatrum jahi vishnu yantrito yato harer vijaya shri raghunastataha. He is saying nanvesha vajrastava shakra tejasa. So he says that Shakra, Shakra is a name which is used to refer to Indra. So, the Tava Shakra, the weapon that you have now, Indra, Vajras Tava Shakra, the Tejasa, its power is not just your own power, it is Harer Dadichis Tapasaj Tejitaha. So, that is Lord Hari's blessings and Dadichis Tapasya. Both of them are there together. Tenaiva Shatru Jahi Vishnu Yantrito. So by that you should kill your enemy, and this is ordained by Lord Vishnu. Yantrito. Yantra means machine, and the word yantrito means controlled as if by machine. So the normal idea is that a machine doesn't have any independent will of its own. If it is ordered properly, then it will act according to that order. So he is saying this is Vishnu yantrito. It is arranged by Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. So his order can never be disobeyed. And because Chatrum Jahi Vishnu Yantrito, because it has been arranged by the order of Lord Vishnu that your enemy will be killed, Yato Harir Vijaya Shrir Guna Astataha. Therefore, your Vijay and your good fortune are definitely there. So interestingly, Tenaiva Chatrum, he is saying, your enemy. He is not actually referring to himself. Because here he is giving Indra faith in a general principle that whatever is ordained and empowered by the Lord is sure to happen, and there is no doubt about that. So after speaking this, then in the next verse he will go further and he will start speaking about his own consciousness. So till now, actually speaking, Indra has been the object of his speech. But slowly, from this verse onwards, the object of his speech, that means to whom he is speaking, that changes. So the next verse marks a sort of transition. And then 2-3 verses later, he almost shifts off and goes into samadhi, where he is no longer addressing Indra, he is directly addressing the Supreme Lord and offering prayers to the Supreme Lord. So in the previous verse he says, by your weapon, by the power of the weapon that you have got, because its power is supplemented by the austerity of the Dichi and the instruction of Vishnu, it is infallible, it will kill your enemy. And actually the question may come up then, but you are that enemy and you will be killed. So why are you encouraging me like that? So Vritrasura answers in the next verse, Aham samadhaya mano yathana, Aham samadhaya mano yathana, Sankarshanastacharana ravinde, Tvadvajraramho lulitagramyapasho, Gatim munerya mya pavidhalokaha. So, aham samadhaya mano yathana. He says, samadhaya manaha, like in samadhi I will fix my mind, yathaha, like that, sankarshanasta charanaravinde, just as Sankarshan had told me, and tvadvajramo lutagramya pasho. So by your vajra, it will be torn apart. What will be torn apart? Ramho is force, ramhasa. Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the verse comes that everybody is moved by the power of time, the force of time. So is the by the force of your vajra, lulit, he'll be ripped apart. What will be ripped apart? Gramya pasho, this material body. So gramya means material or mundane. So this mundane body will be ripped apart. And gatirmuneryamya apaviddhalokaha. So the gati, the destination that has been talked about by the munis like Narad Muni, I will attain that. Apaviddhalokaha. So apaviddha means giving up, and lokaha is this material world, where one desires all kind of impermanent things, Prabhupada writes in this translation. So he is now longing for the eternal. And he is saying that I will get that eternal by being torn apart by your weapon. So actually here, Vritrasura starts expressing an exalted devotional aspiration. And he is saying that I want to return back to the Supreme Lord, to go get out of this world of misery. So a devotee who has developed his devotion for the Lord, for him actually the death is not a disaster or a tragedy. Death is welcome because that enables him to re-enter eternal life, to regain eternal existence. So now he starts speaking further. Pumsam kilaikanta dhyam svakanam yasampado divi bhumau rasayam ratiyadvesha udvegadhir madhakalir vyasanam samprayasaha. So he is describing pumsai kilaikanta dhyam svakanam. So ekanta dhyam svakanam. Ekanta dhyam means dhyā is intelligence or consciousness. So ekanta dhyā means those whose consciousness is fixed one place. Svakanam, these are accepted as the associates of the Lord. So he is saying that to them the Lord does not bestow what? Yasampado divi bhumau rasayam. He doesn't give them the sampatti, the wealth, the possession of the heavenly planets. Divi bhumau is earthly planets, rasayam is the lower planet, like rasatal. Narayatiyat dvesha udvega adhir. Why? Because this reward, rati, by getting this, what happens? Dvesha udvega adhi. One gets envy, one gets anxiety, one gets mental agitation. Madha kalir vyasanam samprayasaha. That one becomes intoxicated by pride, one quarrels with others. Vyasanam, one becomes distressed when one loses his samprayasaha. And one has to make a Herculean effort to attain it. So now, the whole context of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to exalt pure devotional service. And when the aspiration for pure devotional service is present, then the normal Vedic hierarchy is reversed. So in the normal Vedic hierarchy, the demons are considered evil and the demigods are considered virtuous. And that is true to some extent. Because the demigods follow the Supreme Lord, Vishnu Bhakta Smita Deva Asurastad Viparyaya, and the demons don't follow the Supreme Lord. But the Bhagavatam shows that if a demon follows the Supreme Lord, then the demon becomes greater than the devotee. And this we will see repeatedly in the 6th, 7th and 8th cantos. The 6th canto we have the example of Ritrasur, who is exhibiting divine qualities at the moment of death. Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto exhibits divine qualities despite being constantly threatened by death, and in the 8th canto Bali Maharaj exhibits divine qualities despite being in a situation which is as bad or as worse than death. to be disgraced in front of his followers, in front of his wife, and to be bound like a prisoner and to lose everything and to be even rejected and cursed by one's own guru. So it is all very terrible. But even in that situation, he maintains his devotion. In fact, he takes further steps in his devotion even in that situation and or through that situation. So here Indra will get the question, but if you die, you are saying that you will get the association of sages like Narad Muni, but then I thought that you were attacking me because you wanted heaven. That's the whole idea, that the demons want to take over the position of Indra and become the kings of heaven. So don't you want that? So now the question comes up that why is Dhritarashtra, if he's such a devotee, behaving like a demon? Actually, it is the arrangement of the Lord that the Lord sometimes wants his devotees to manifest their devotion at a particular time. You know, just like I was talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, for some time in his spiritual life, when he seemed to be exploring before he actually, in a sense, discovered Gaudiya Vaishnavism, so he was first exploring Brahmoism, started by Ram Mohan Roy. Then he explored Unitarian Christianity, and then he read Western philosophical works. So all that time, his devotion was not manifested. He was acting just like a typical intellectual of his times, exploring various phenomena, various schools of thought. So, but at one particular time, the Lord arranged for his devotion to manifest. Similarly, Dhritarashtra, being born in the demoniac family, was acting like a demon till then. And then as a demon is described, that when he was charged towards the devtas and their soldiers, he would practically crush them underfoot. So Dhritarashtra, actually speaking, was gigantic in size, and the demigods were frightened just by his size. And then when he would roar, and his appearance was also not very pleasant, he looked ferocious. So he is now, actually speaking, he does not look at all like a hero. He looks quite ferocious. Even the other demons, or those who are born in demoniac families, Prahlad, actually is a simple, sweet, innocent 5-year-old boy. So we don't think of him as a demon. Certainly his devotion is extraordinary for a tender boy of that age. But still, we don't conceive of him as a demoniac. And so it's not so surprising to hear extraordinary devotional prayers from him. And Bali Maharaj, he, although he's born in a demoniac family, not all people who are born in a demoniac family have distorted bodies. Of course, the Rakshasas often have distorted bodies, but Ravana would also not necessarily always exhibit his 10 heads. Sometimes he would just exhibit 1 head, sometimes he would exhibit 10 heads. It could vary from person to person. So we might have an image of, say, demons as having horns on their heads and teeth coming out of their mouth and having a spine-chilling laughter, something like that. So, of course, what I laugh is a caricature of the laughter. And if I laugh, probably you will laugh at that. But if Dhritarashtra would laugh, we would not laugh. Your hearts would quake on hearing that laughter. So the point I am making is that we can visualize Prahlad as a devotee. We can to some extent visualize even Bali Maharaj as a devotee. But it's particularly difficult to visualize Dhritarashtra as a devotee, because from his externals, he doesn't seem at all like a devotee. He seems like a total demon, the sight of whom would cause our blood to curdle and our spine to chill, and we would faint in horror or flee as fast as we could at his very sight. So Indra, of course, because he's a Kshatriya, he did not flee. A Kshatriya has the normally has the courage in war that he will never flee. But he was also disheartened to see the power. And he thought, okay, he might have a big size, but still my gada has power. And he threw the gada. Sometimes somebody may be big in size, but that person may not be very skilled in fighting. So that in such a situation, small people can even defeat the big people. The big person is not very skilled. But when Dhritarashtra caught the gada and threw back the gada at Indra, he is not only powerful, he is extremely skilled. His alert, his skill is formidable. He is practically undefeatable. What to do now? So Dhritarashtra, in every possible way that we can think of, is scary. Scary to look and scary to hear. And it is he who is speaking such extraordinary devotional sentiments. So the Bhagavatam urges us to go beyond appearances. Don't get caught with how a person looks. Many times when Srila Prabhupada went to America, when he saw the hippies, if he had just gone on appearances, he would have said, these people can never become devotees. And they are smoking and drinking and they are having illicit relationships so freely. How can these people ever become devotees? This is stupid. This is hopeless to even try to make them devotees. But Srila Prabhupada could see beyond the externals. He could see the internal, and thereby he could know that actually there is a potential for devotion in these people. Now what Dhritarashtra had was not just the potential for devotion, he had already advanced devotion. He had potent devotion, not just the potential for devotion. But it is difficult sometimes by our material vision to see even potent devotion, what to speak of potential devotion. So it's only when a person speaks that actually we can understand his heart. Of course, not just when he speaks. So when that person acts according to the speech. So Dhritarashtra is not only speaking exalted things, but we see that he's living his talk, he's walking his talk by being fearless at the time of death. So in general, just by appearances, if we try to judge other devotees, we might misunderstand them, and in some unfortunate situation might even offend them. So we can't know what is the heart of a person. It's only when we hear a person that we start understanding his heart. So let us see what is in the heart of Dhritarashtra. So he is actually expressing his faith in the Supreme Lord in a second way now. So the first faith in the Supreme Lord he has expressed is that whatever the Lord ordains is always successful. It never fails. So if the Lord has given a weapon and has told that this weapon will cause the death of your enemy, it will cause the death. Now he is describing in the next verse that actually that Lord does not give such temporary results which require great effort and which cause misery to those who are ekanta dhyam. Those who are his one-pointed devotees. So he's not directly saying that I am his one-pointed devotee, but indirectly he's telling Indra that actually you can keep Swarga, but my Lord is so great that he will not give this to me. He will give me something else, something infinitely greater. And so now he starts speaking the verse which marks the transit. So from the last verse, from the previous 22nd and 23rd verse, are marking the transit of his thoughts from Indra to the Lord. So earlier he was telling Indra, you kill me, and then in 21st, 22nd, 23rd verse, 21st verse he said, actually the Lord's, so in this talk with Indra, the Lord comes into the picture for the first time now. And he says, Lord's word will always come true. Then 22nd verse he said, actually Lord doesn't give material benefits to his devotees. And then now in 23rd verse he will say, so Indra may say, actually, and what is the use of worshipping God? Actually, in the Vedic or Karmakanda understanding, the purpose of worship is to get material benefits. So he says, if you worship God and don't get anything material, then what is the use of worshipping such a God? That's the question that might come in Indra's mind. He says, I went to, so the few chapters before this, in the 6th canto, it is described how Indra went to the Supreme Lord along with the Devatas. For what? And he offered exalted prayers over there. A very learned prayers actually he offered. And asked what? Please give us some arrangement by which you can kill Indra. And actually the Lord expresses regret over there and he says that, you know, I would have arranged for that anyway. I'll take care of my devotees. Why did you have to ask that specifically from me?
You didn't have to ask that. I regret that you had to ask that. I would have given it anyway. But Indra, although he got that chastisement from the Lord, chastisement is a strong word. The Lord expressed regret or reproach, a disapproval. The word chastisement conveys the idea of beating with a verbal rod. Chastisement is a strong word. Reproach or a reprimand is a slightly milder thing. It is disapproval basically. I don't like this. It's not that I'm going to beat you or if you do this, but I don't like it. But Indra seems to have forgotten that. Indra is so concerned about his position of Swarga, and he's saying, you said in the previous statement that actually the Lord doesn't give these things, Devi Bhuvo Rasayam. Then what is the use of worshipping such a Lord? Now, Vritrasura makes a prayer which is just similar to Kunti Maharani's prayer in the 8th chapter of the first canto, 1.8.25. So let's recite this verse. Traivargikaya svighatam asmat. Traivargikaya svighatam asmat. Patirvidhatte purushasya shakra. Patirvidhatte purushasya shakra. Tato numeyo bhagvat prasado. Tato numeyo bhagvat prasado. Yo durlabho kinchana gocharonyai. Yo durlabho kinchana gocharonyai. So he is describing Traivarga. So Traivarga can refer to Dharma, Artha, Kama. Actually, Prabhupada, Vighata Masmat. Vighata means the destroyer. Asmat. So Patir, Vidhatte Purushasya Shakra. Shakra is again referring to Indra. So Pati is our Lord. He is referring to Lord Vishnu. So Purushasya is the devotee. So he is saying that the Traivarga, the Dharma, Artha, Kama of a devotee, our Lord destroys that. And from this, Tato Anumeyo Bhagwat Prasado. From this, you can understand how merciful the Lord is. And Indra says, what kind of mercy is this? And you mean to say that you have a flourishing business and God destroys your whole business? And you say, this is the mercy of the Lord. What kind of mercy is this? So actually, what Vritrasura is using a word, very interesting word, Anumeyo. Anumeyo means by this you can estimate. You can actually infer. Anuman Pramani, say, that is inference. So you can infer from this how merciful the Lord is. Now Indra's brain stops working over here. He says, how can you infer from this? Suppose as a student I go to study for an exam. And if somebody tells me, see, God is so merciful that he made you fail on all your papers. Hey, what kind of mercy is this? So this psychs out Indra. He says, how can this be mercy? And then it's almost like a patronizing taunt to Indra. He says, yo durlabho kinchana gocharonyai. He says, don't worry, you will not get this kind of mercy because it is durlabha. It is a very rare kind of mercy. And who gets it? Akinchana gocharo. That actually those who are akinchana, those who are pure devotees, who don't want anything else, gochar anyai. So only they are given that mercy. Others are not given that mercy. So some of us, we might get nervous by hearing this, so we shouldn't worry about it. No, Krishna is not going to give us this kind of mercy unless we ask for it. And we shouldn't ask for it if we are not prepared for it. Surely we should ask for advancement in devotional service, but we should also ask Krishna that please keep me always engaged in service. That's why we should not pray to Krishna that please give me calamity in my life, because if actually the calamity comes, whether we will be able to endure that calamity, we can't say. It's quite likely that we may lose faith at that particular time. Rato anumeyo bhagvat prasado. By this you can infer how glorious is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And who will get this mercy? Yo durlabho akinchana gocharo anyai. That actually the anyai, apart from the akinchana, nobody else will get this mercy. So Srila Prabhupada explains this, how he got this mercy in his life when his business collapsed. And Prabhupada would quote another verse which has a similar meaning, which is also from the Bhagavatam. Yasyaham anugrami harishyatadhananshani. Tato dhanam dayatyasya svajam dukkha dukkhita. that actually the Lord takes away everything from his devotee so that the devotee has nothing and nowhere to turn to except Krishna. So in this way, he is also expressing a similar sentiment over here. So why does the Lord is not the destroyer of the devotee's material life? Actually, the Lord's primary concern is to get the devotee to become devoted singularly to him. And for that singular devotion, whatever is required, the Lord is ready to do that. So if what is required for that is the destruction of the devotee's material life, because that material life is distracting the devotee from Krishna, then the Lord is even ready to do that. But the Lord, that is not the Lord's primary interest or purpose. The Lord's primary interest and purpose is to get the devotee to be focused on him. And if we are using our material assets in Krishna's service, then we shouldn't be fearful that something like that will happen to us. Actually, if at all some calamity comes in our life, Krishna will give us the strength to face the calamity. And what we should pray for Krishna, pray to Krishna for, is not for calamity, but for strength. Because actually it is not only calamity which requires strength to practice devotional service. Even prosperity requires strength. If we get a lot of worldly prosperity, at that time we need actually greater strength to continue on devotional service, because it is so easy to get intoxicated and infatuated by prosperity. So whether it is prosperity or whether it is adversity, the challenge to devotion is always there. And therefore, rather than asking for prosperity or asking for adversity, we should focus on asking for the strength to serve Krishna all the time. Krishna, whatever you want to give me, please, I will accept that, but please never take away from me the strength to serve you. Please give me the strength to serve you. And if we ask Krishna for the strength, he will surely give it to us. And when he gives us the strength, then we can march ahead in our spiritual life, whatever that happens in our life, through adversity and through prosperity. And when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, actually we are asking Krishna for the strength. Please engage me in your service, Krishna. Please give me the strength to serve you. So now, let's recite this verse once again with contemplation on its meaning, which is so extraordinary. Traivargikaya svighatamasmat. Traivargikaya svighatamasmat. Patirvidhatte purushasya chakra. Patirvidhatte purushasya chakra. Tato numeyo bhagvat prasado. Tato numeyo bhagvat prasado. Yo durlabho kinchin gocharo anyai. Yo durlabho kinchin gocharo anyai. So, now, if the devotee loses everything, then what is left with him? If Traivarga, if Dharma, Artha, Kama, everything is lost from him. So, what does it mean to lose Dharma? It to some extent means that to lose one's pious credits or to lose one's reputation as a pious person. It can mean both. So, if one loses Dharma, Artha, Kama, everything, then what will remain? These are the things that people desire in life. So, what is left to desire? That Vritarasa describes in the next verse. So, what will I desire? He expresses desire. Aham hare tava padai kamula dasanu daso bhavitasmi huyaha. Aham hare tava padai kamula dasanu daso bhavitasmi bhuya. Manasmare tasu pater gunamste. Manasmare tasu pater gunamste. Grinitva karma karo tukayaha. Grinitva karma karo tukayaha. So aham hare. So now aham hare tava. So as I was telling, there's a transition. So Indra is the object of Ritarasa's speech. But while speaking to Indra, the thoughts of the Lord come into the mind. And gradually, as he's thinking of the Lord more and more, then Ritarasa's focus shifts to the Lord. And now Indra disappears from the thoughts of Ritarasa. Although Ritarasa is on the battlefield, he gets completely absorbed in his contemplation on the Lord. And actually, when the devotee contemplates on the Lord, depending on the intensity of the devotion with which the devotee contemplates, the Lord's presence gets invoked over there. So now Ritarasura is actually feeling the presence of the Lord, and the Lord is there for Ritarasura because he's the exalted devotee. And Ritarasura is addressing the Lord in the second person. So first person is aham, second person is tava. So earlier tava was referring to Indra, but now Ritarasura's attention has shifted. And it's almost as if he's in the presence of the Lord and he's speaking to the Lord. He says, aham hare tava.
O Hari, unto you, Padaika Mula Dasanu Daso.
He says that I want to become the servant of your lotus feet. Padaika Mula. I want to become the servant of your lotus feet. And then what else do I want to do?
Manasmare Tasupate Gunamste.
Manasmare. With my mind, I want to remember, I want to contemplate. Asupate Gunamste. It's a very beautiful usage over here. Asupate. So, as I Pate is the Lord, Master, Husband. So, in the previous verse also, he had used the word Pati to refer to the Lord. He's my Lord. Now, Pati is actually Master, Lord, Husband. It's quite an intimate form of address. So, here he is using the interesting word Asupate Gunamste. So, Asu is the life heir. So, Ashochanan Vashochastam Prakyavadamscha Bhashase Gatasun Gatasunscha Nanushochanti Panditaha.
So, in this is the first verse which Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita as a verse of instruction, 1.11, so 2.11. And in that, the word is Gata Asun and Agat Asun. So, Gata Asu is those whose life air has passed away. That means those who have died. Agat Asun is those whose life air has not passed away. They have not died. So, Asupater. So, you are the Lord of my life heirs. So now we will not think of Lord of my life heirs, but actually the life heirs are for all practical purposes equivalent to life. When the life heirs leave the body, in the Vedanta Sutra, the analysis is given. Baldev Vidyabhushan explains in his commentary quite elaborately in the third chapter of the Vedanta Sutra that actually the life heir, when the soul leaves the gross body, actually the soul leaves in the subtle body and the life heirs also go with it. So actually to say the Lord of the life heirs means to say the Lord of life. So manas mare tasupater. So he says, actually with my mind I want to remember you who are the Lord of my life. I do not want anything else. And so first he is saying that I just want to be devoted to you completely. Aham tavapadaika moola. So I want to be a servant of your lotus feet. Now to be a servant is not just an abstract conception. So how I want to be a servant, he is describing that I want to be a servant with my body, mind and words. So first he is describing the mind. Now he will describe the words. Grinit vak. I want to speak about with you my voice. What I want to speak? Gunamste. I want to speak about your qualities. And karma karo tu kayaha. With my body I want to serve you. So he is describing that I want to absorb and consume my existence and all the faculties that I have, my body, mind and words, in your service. So, actually, this aspiration of Ritrasura is the essence of sannyas. As we know, sannyasis carry a tridanda, and those tridandas, three sticks, convey that with the three faculties that the human being has, the body, mind and speech, they will serve the Lord. So, Ritrasura in one sense is a demon, and Kshatriyas normally don't take sannyas. But Prabhupada also explains that sannyas is not just a matter of dress, it's a matter of the heart. So, in one sense, in this verse, he is taking sannyas. Prabhupada explains that sannyas means social death. So, Ritrasura is preparing for social death, and he's not just preparing for social death, he's actually preparing also for physical death. When a sannyasi dies, those mantras are chanted, which are chanted when a person dies. That means the person is now socially dead. In fact, in some schools, especially in the Mayavadi schools, actually when a person takes sannyas, a funeral pyre is prepared. And the person has to lie down on the funeral pyre. And of course, they don't set the funeral pyre on fire. But apart from setting that on fire, all the other mantras are chanted as if that person has died. And after lying on that funeral pyre for some time, then the person gets up. And the idea is, so that is quite a sobering ritual. So, and many times in some Mayavadi sannyas lines, actually Even this funeral pyre, the sannyas ceremony is not done in the matha of the sannyasi. It is sometimes done actually in the smashan ghat. Now, when we think of smashan ghat, normally we think of, say, some place where the body is burned. It's in one corner of the city where nobody wants to go to. The name may be Kailash Dham or Vaikuntha Dham or something like that. But it's such a unnerving place to even pass by. Nobody will want to go there. But in the traditional context, Smashan Ghat would mean the banks of a river. Just like in Kashi, there's the Manikarnika Ghat where the bodies are burnt. So, many times in the traditional orders of sannyas, or traditional rituals of sannyas, actually there may be a funeral ceremony going on, and there is a corpse where the body is actually being burned, and next to that there is another funeral pyre, and on that the body is kept, and body is not kept, the sannyasi goes there and lies down himself over there, and again the same mantras are chanted here and the same mantras are chanted there. So it's a very sobering, almost frightening ceremony that happens. And the idea is that sort of ritual creates a tremendous samskara on the mind. Yes, actually, soon in the future, maybe a few years or at the most a few decades afterwards, I will have to undergo this ceremony. And if I have to undergo this ceremony, at that time, this what I am going through is not just a mock rehearsal of something that is imaginary. I'm going through this sort of ceremony so that I dedicate my remaining life to prepare for that. So it's a very sobering idea. So that sentiment, we may not have that kind of sannyas ceremony within ISKCON, and many of us may not even officially take sannyas. But all of us need to try to cultivate this mood of single-pointed devotion, which involves using all our faculties for the service of the Lord. So in one sense, in this verse, Vritrasura is taking sannyas and he's offering his entire existence to the service of the Lord. So then, let's see what is the next verse. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that this verse gives the sum and substance of devotional service. And what is sum and substance? I want to serve you, and I will serve you with all my faculties, body, mind and words. And again, to emphasize this, so earlier he was actually telling Indra that our Lord does not give these things. But now, when we offer ourselves to the Lord may ask us, yes, I am pleased with your worship of me, what do you want? So, Vritrasur here talks first in the negative. He says, what I don't want. Nanaka prishtam nacha parameshtam. Nanaka prishtam nacha parameshtam. Sarvabhaumam narasadhipatyam. Na sarvabhaumam narasadhipatyam. Na yoga siddhira punar bhavam va. Na yoga siddhira punar bhavam va. Samanjasattva virahaya kaankshe. Samanjasattva virahaya kaankshe. So he's describing anaka prishtam na cha parameshtyam. What I do not want? Anaka prishtam. I do not want the heavenly planets. Nakapushtam refers to Dhruvaloka. Parameshtyam, and higher than Dhruvaloka is Parameshti is Brahmaji. I do not want his abode also. Sarvabhaumam. Sarvabhaumam means, just like we have Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. So he was considered to be a very learned person. Sarvabhumi was controlled by him. That's the idea of that title, Sarvabhauma. His name was actually Vasudev. He's given the title of first of Bhattacharya, then of Sarvabhauma. Sarvabhauma means, so for if it's a Brahmana, then his conquest of all the lands can give him the title of Sarvabhauma in terms of intellectual conquest. And for a Kshatriya, that conquest will be in terms of martial conquest, conquering the other kingdoms in terms of defeating the Kshatriya rulers. So he says, I don't want Sarvabhaumam, I don't want sovereignty over the earth also. Narasadhipatyam. Na rasa, so among the lower planets, rasata is considered important. Na rasa adipatyam. So earlier also the word rasiva is described. So I do not want that also. So there is some repetition, but the object of speech is different. Earlier the object of speech was Indra, now the object of the speech is the Lord. The yoga siddhi. So he says, I don't want even yoga siddhi. I do not want the mystic powers and apunarbhavam va. No, I do not want even liberation. Then what do I want? Tavirahya kankshe. He says, I am only longing to... But actually is not telling what I am longing to. Kankshi here refers to, I do not long for any of these things. And interestingly, he is using a very significant word, samanjasa. Samanjasa means that actually you are the source of all opportunities. Whatever anybody wants, this person can get from you. So he says, I do not want any of these things from you, my dear Lord. Samanjasa. I do not want any of these things from you. Then what do I want? And Lord may ask, what do you want? So that he will describe in the next verse. So this and the next verse are the climax of the prayers of Ratrasura. And they reveal the aspiration that all of us can try to cultivate in our own spiritual lives. So, Ajata Paksha Iva Mataram Khagaha Stanyam Yatha Vatsatara Akshudartha Priyam Priyeva Vyushitam Vishanna Manorvindakshididrushate Twam. So, Ajata Paksha Iva Mataram Khaga. Ajata. So, there are three beautiful metaphors drawn from nature. And their beauty is in the tenderness and the sweetness of the metaphors. And that the tenderness of the metaphors is all the more dramatically highlighted when we consider that these tender metaphors are coming from the mouths of a person whose appearance is the antithesis of tenderness. As I said, Vritrasura is extremely ferocious to look at. And to think of such a ferocious looking demon with blazing eyes, with a flat balding head, with a spine-chilling laughter, and a gigantic size, speaking such tender emotions. It's so amazing to try to contemplate on this. Ajata Paksha. So, Paksha is a bird. Ajata Paksha, it doesn't refer literally to an unborn bird, but it refers to a bird who has not yet got his wings. So, the bird is in that sense not fully grown up, and in that sense he's not yet actually become a bird. A bird is characterized by the ability to fly. As long as a bird does not have the ability to fly, he's not yet properly a bird, is he? Ajata paksha iva mataram khagaha. So because such a bird cannot feed itself on its own, so it is always longing, when will my mother come back, and when will my mother offer me not just food, but for the baby bird, the food is the expression of the love of the mother. So, when will I get that love? And the love expressed through the mother and the mother's food, mother bird's food. Stanyam yata vatsatara kshudartha. And similarly, kshudartha. Artha means to be distressed. Kshuda means by hunger. So, when the vatsataraha, when the baby cow or the calf is tormented by hunger, and when that baby calf gets the stanya, the udders of the mother cow, then that is an expression again, not just of food. Food can also be an expression of love, and that's why it is so important that bhunte bhojete chaiva, that offering prasadam and accepting prasadam is considered to be a limb of devotional service. And what is it? So he's saying that for them, the mother cow is the expression of love. And then priyam priyeva vishitam vishanna. Priyam priyeva. He's describing that actually how just as a wife, when she's waiting for her husband, is separated from the husband and she's longing, when will he come back? And then we will have loving exchanges once again. So similarly, mano arvindakshi didrukshate tvam. Similarly, my mind longs for you, my dear Lord. And here, till now he was using the word like hare and pati. Now he's using again an intimate form of address, arvindaksha, O lotus-eyed one. So he's referring to the beauty of the Lord. So I long to see you. It's even more specific. Actually, my mind hankers to see you. It's interesting phraseology. Because normally if you want to see, we see with our eyes. So didrukshate is seeing. But he says, mano arvinda kidrukshate. My mind wants to see you. So actually speaking, many times we go and take darshan of the deities. So often, our eyes are taking darshan, but our mind is not so eager to take darshan of the Lord. Our mind is maybe eager to think of so many other things and see so many other things. When our mind becomes eager to see the Lord, to chant the holy names of the Lord and to remember the Lord, then we have attained advanced stage of devotional service. In fact, then actually devotional service becomes quite easy and joyful. Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, Mai Asakta Manaha in 7.1. And the acharyas described that this is a symptom of a very advanced devotee. Almost a devotee has become a pure devotee, has attained the perfection. Because if the mind is attached to Krishna, then practically all the problems of devotional life are solved. So, here, the Lord may say that, you know, you are saying you don't want all these things. You don't want you don't want heavens, you don't want even liberation. And he's expressing, yes. It's not just a formality that I'm expressing with my words. Actually, many times when we say, yes, na dhanam, na janam, na sundari, we speak that as a ritual every day when we chant the Shikshashtakam. But actually, our mind still hankers for those things. So we have to fight off those desires. But Vritrasara is saying, I don't have to fight off any of those desires. When I say no, I mean no. So actually we have to pray that when we say no, nadhanam, najanam, nasundari, when we say no, we mean no. So he say that actually I mean no because my mind is attracted to you, my dear Lord. Mano arvindakshi didrukshate tvam. My mind longs to see you. And Prabhupada interestingly translates this as, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service to you. So why? Because after we see the Lord, what are we going to do? We are going to serve him. So Prabhupada always brings us down to a realistic level, not a sentimental or a ethereal level of devotional service. Yes, we want to see the Lord, but after seeing what we'll do, we'll serve him. So then now, Yudhrasura concludes by saying, I don't want to have any other attachments except you. So actually, our attachments are primarily to two things. Possessions, things and beings. So things are objects and beings are people. So in the 25th verse, when he says, Naka Prishtam Naj Parameshtam, he says, I don't want anything of this world. And then he says, I only want you. And in this world, in this last concluding verse, he says, I don't want any attachment to the people of this world also. So I am not attracted to things, I am not attracted to beings. Nothing except you, my dear Lord. Of course, if you are attached to devotees, and the devotees are increasing attachment to Krishna, that is different. But he is saying, I don't want an attachment to my material relatives, at a material level. Namottama shloka janeshu sakhyam. Namottama shloka janeshu sakhyam. Samsara chakre brahmata svakarma bhi. Samsara chakre brahmata svakarma bhi. Tvanmayayatmatma jadar geheshwa. Tvanmayayatmatma jadar geheshwa. Asatta chittasya nath bhuyat. Asatta chittasya nath bhuyat. So he's describing mama uttama shloka janeshu sakhyam. Mama uttama shloka. Me, oh your Lord, uttama shloka. So, don't you want anything, my dear Lord? So he said, you want this? And I simply want to serve you, but I want to do something for you. Please tell me what I should do for you. So, if at all you want to do anything for me, please cut off my attachments to all my material relatives. So he says, what should you do? Janeshu, uttama shloka janeshu sakhyam. He says that, my dear Lord, all that I want is I want attachment to your devotees. Janeshu, uttama shloka janeshu means your devotees. Uttama shloka, the Lord Jana is his people. Krishna's people, his devotees, sakhyam. I want friendship to them. Samsara chakre brahmata svakarma bhi. I am wandering around in this material existence because of my own karma.
And by line, what do I want? Tvanmayayatmatmajidarageshva. That Tvanmayaya, by the power of your Maya, Atma is the body over here. Atmaja is that which is connected to the body, that is born from the body, that is the children. Dara is the wife, Geheshva is the home. So, these things, the body and the relatives related to the body and the house and everything. Asatta chittasya nanatha bhuyat. I do not want to be attached to any of these things, my dear Lord. So if you want to give me anything, you give me freedom from attachment to these things. Just cut off my attachment. Nanatha bhuyat. I don't want any more of these attachments. So all of us have our own attachments, and those attachments distract us from Krishna and keep us bound to this material existence. And this is the last line, even if you can't remember the full verse, we can just remember this one last line and we can pray to the Lord. Whenever our material attachments start overwhelming us, Asatta chittasya nanatha bhuyat. My dear Lord, I don't want to be attached to all these things. Please free me from all these attachments. Life after life after life, I have remained in the misery of material existence, forgetful of you, envious of you, rebelling against you, chasing after pleasure in the mirage of this desert of material existence and never getting any happiness. I don't want this anymore, my dear Lord. Asakta chittasya nanatha bhuyat. I do not want to be attached to any of these things anymore. Please free me from this attachment. This is the innermost expression of the devotion from that is erupting like a volcano from the heart of Rudrasura through his words, not only to touch the heart of the Lord but to touch all our hearts also. So this is the true heroism of Rudrasura. The heroism is not just heroically catching Indra's gada and throwing it back to him. That is extraordinary. That is definitely heroic. It is extraordinarily heroic. But the greatest, most extraordinary heroism is the willingness that when Maya throws the sense objects towards us to tempt us, you know, we catch them and throw them back again. Not that we abuse people in the name of throwing off the sense objects, but that we refuse to be threatened by those sense objects. We refuse to be allured or disturbed by the sense objects. So all the shackles, all the attachment that Maya throws towards us, to not let ourselves be caught or injured by them, but to catch them and throw them back again. By the strength of our remembrance of Krishna and our devotion to Krishna, that is the greatest heroism. And that heroism comes not by just by developing a formidable physique or by developing a great memory. That devotion actually comes by the sincere desire for it in our heart, a sincere desire that is expressed through intense chanting of the holy names and through humble service to the Lord's devotees, to those who have that kind of devotion to the Lord. And that's why he's telling him, there's uttama shloka janeshu sakhyam. I want to have friendship with your devotees. Because when we say we want to serve devotees, we cannot serve them unless we have a friendly and loving disposition towards them. Because devotional service is voluntary and devotional service is internal primarily. Certainly it has to be externally expressed, but it is a matter of the heart. So if we don't have a friendly disposition towards devotees, we cannot serve them with our hearts. And if we cannot serve them with our hearts, then how will our hearts go towards Krishna? So therefore, even if we have some bitter exchanges with some devotees, we can pray to Krishna, Krishna, please arrange that, let those bitter sentiments go away and let me have friendship with your devotees. Uttama shlokeshu janeshu sakhyam. Let me have friendship with your devotees. And of course, we can do what we can to try to set the relationships right. And especially those devotees through whom or with whom we are trying to serve Krishna, we need to have a good relationship with them. So that actually we can have a devotional disposition while we are rendering service. And when Asakta Chittasya Nata Bhuyat, my dear Lord, I do not want to be attached to any of the things of this world anymore. Please, let my mind become fixed on you and you alone. So Vritrasura is maybe is not in the list of the 12 Mahajanas. But Srila Prabhupada explained that the 12, list of 12 Mahajanas is indicative, it is not exhaustive of all the great souls. But through his example, he is telling us that anybody and everybody from whatever background they may be and what can become a devotee. And that is for us we applied that whatever be our background, our fallen, we can become devotees. Dhritarashtra was born in a demoniac family, but still he exhibited such exalted devotion. And not only that, anybody and anyone, whatever be their external appearance, they may have extraordinarily intense devotional heart. So we shouldn't judge devotees by external appearance. So, in this way we can keep a devotional center for our own devotional lives and keep a devotional vision of others. And in that way we can march forward in our devotional life. Shri Vritrasura ki jai, Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivanda ki jai, Nitai Gaura Premanande. Hari Hari Gaur. Thank you very much.